from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, I've now received every kind of goofy email that's possible to receive. I know. If emails could work just by themselves, my mail appendage now would be the size of the Empire State Building, just from reading those. But I've received an email, a lovely, lovely email from a correspondent who was bitching about the fact that opening of the show, he doesn't like the fact that it's misusing Mozart. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? This is New Orleans, Louisiana, and the political chattering class, some of them at least, came down here for the last days of the big Senate runoff race, which was held yesterday. And so they'll be going back on their diets now, which will involve a great deal of, not a New Orleans specialty, but a specialty for the pundit class this year, broiled crow. Because everybody said, oh, Susie Terrell, she's got all the Republican candidate for a senator in Louisiana. She's got all the momentum. That's right. Just until Election Day. And then, of course, incumbent Democrat Mary Landrieu was reelected. So those polls were really worth a lot of money. One of the things that interested me about that race, ladies and gentlemen, having spent much of that campaign here in Louisiana, was observing the fact that no matter who talked about this Senate, and this was a race for the United States Senate. This was not dog catcher we're talking about here. This is people who do less than dog catcher. But it's a Senate. Some vestigial dignity still attaches, it can be argued. And yet everybody who talked about this race, whether they were pundits or other politicians, referred to the two candidates as Mary and Susie. Well, it's Mary and Susie, you know. It's Mary and Susie. They're Mary and Susie throwing dirt at each other. Now, I admit to having had enough spare time to have paid attention to the 2000 race as well. And I don't remember people talking about, well, it's Georgie and Al, or even in California this year, Gray and Bill. But Susie and Mary. So obviously the gals have some way to go yet, including keeping me from calling them gals. The two magic words. Now, everybody's on television over the weekend on the Yak shows trying to explain why they were so wrong about Susie versus Mary and why Susie isn't going to Washington and Mary is. There were two words, two magic words, two words with unbelievable power that were unleashed by Mary Landrieu, the supposedly unmomentumed Democratic incumbent running for re-election in the last days. By the way, on my way to getting to that, they run commercials here on Election Day. That's really amazing. They have the election on Saturday, and they were running commercials all day for the election, for the candidates. They don't shut up. But the two magic words that Mary Landrieu unleashed in the last 2 days of her political campaign, which apparently were all it took to put her over the top, were Mexican sugar. Just Friday, she started saying, there's this secret deal to bring a whole bunch of Mexican sugar in, and that's going to devastate Louisiana cane growers. But just whatever its effect on Louisiana cane growers, ladies and gentlemen, just the frightening power of those two words, Mexican sugar. It probably isn't even sweet, you know? It's just Mexican sugar. Now, there's no necessary coherence to what she was saying, because she was also proposing that Louisiana export rice to Cuba. Well, what would they give us in exchange? Oh, some Cuban sugar, maybe. But anyway, the premise was, vote for Mary, or the state will be overrun with Mexican sugar. Here's words of advice to political candidates in the future. Remember those two words. Hello, welcome to the show. You will be my Mexican sugar for the full hour.
Little girls and little boys dream a world full of toys. This time of the year,
when Christmas is near. And evergreens are snowy white, sleigh bells ring through the night. This time of the year, when Christmas is near. And somewhere near a steeple, people kneel and pray, and choirs sing carols. Ah, Christmas Day. Oh, 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 Santa Claus is on his way with loads of joy on his sleigh. This time of the year, when Christmas is near. Somewhere near a steeple, people kneel and pray, and choirs sing carols of Christmas Day. Oh, Santa Claus is on his way with loads of joy on his sleigh. This time of the year, when Christmas is near. This time of the year, when Christmas is near. So near.
southern chicks know how to have fun. You ought to get you one. My southern chick, she's so hot and sticky. My southern magnolia, so tan and so pretty. In the days of Duke, I'm peeping her caboose. She don't want it if it ain't but wild and loose. Getting sweaty when she all wrapped up tight. Got the cold breeze blowing through the trees tonight. She sent me breakfast in bed, and before I split, she made me eggs, pancakes, and yellow cheese grits. Southern chicks know how to have fun. How to have fun. Southern chicks know how to have fun. You ought to get you one. Southern chicks know how to have fun. How to have hot fun. Southern chick know how to have fun. You ought to get you one. We got a chick down in Memphis, Tennessee. No matter what you say, you know she down with me. I got one uptown, she's a hot girl. Got a chick in Atlanta that'll rock your world. Got a chick in Miami, got her own beach house up a ride. And she keep me iced out. Got a chick chick here, a chick chick there. Here chick there, chick a suck a fat dick. Chick Southern chicks know how to have fun. How to have fun. Southern chick know how to have fun. You ought to get you one. Southern chicks know how to have fun.
From the Gulf South, from the queen of the Gulf South, New Orleans, Louisiana, from the French Quarter thereof, this is Le Show. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to another edition thereof. And this from early this week, ladies and gentlemen, AOL Time Warner is a troubled big old company. And the most troubled part is the AOL part. I don't think it was mentioned on this broadcast earlier this year, a quite lovely report that all of the Time Warner parts of the AOL Time Warner enterprise had begged and pleaded and had actually stopped using email because they'd been forced in the merger to use AOL's email services. And Time Magazine and CNN and other parts of the company found that less than what they really needed. So they'd finally gotten the approval to use some other email service. But that's not AOL's problem. Anyway, they named a new guy to take over the AOL part of the company and to relaunch the service with a big bang, which the Big Bang Theory, which he did this this past week. And among the announcements, because they're trying to emphasize broadband, you know, where you pay like $50 a month to get email. What a good deal. The broadband version of the AOL service will include plenty of promotional samples of new films, DVDs, television shows, record albums, and video games. Some would call them commercials or trailers, which cost little or nothing for AOL. Well, that's the good news. You pay $50, they pay nothing. That's called a business model. Continuing to quote from the New York Times article on this, the word exclusive will continue to be splashed liberally around the site in an effort to lift subscribers' sense of the site's value. I read that to you exclusively today here on the show. I hope you appreciate the value of that, ladies and gentlemen. And that was an exclusive explanation of what I just did. The value is rising expeditiously as I speak. And I hope that was an exclusive use of the word expeditious, by the way. Now, ladies and gentlemen, a real exclusive. There were no really egregious examples of burying the lead in news coverage that I saw this week. So I was forced, just to add to your perception of this show's value, to invent a new exclusive feature, which I'll be exclusively calling Close Enough for Journalism. Now, we know that journalism is the first draft of history, and anybody who's written knows how darn sloppy first drafts can be. So these are three examples of people getting it, you know, just close enough for journalism. On, I believe it was Bravo, the new Bravo, with commercials and a lot of repurposed NBC programs, they had a documentary about the Smothers Brothers. And their tumultuous television career. And distinguished journalist, prize-winning journalist David Halberstam, opined in one section of the program about, you know, talking about CBS. The Smothers Brothers had a show on CBS, and CBS ended up canceling the show because of disputes about political material being worked into the comedy. And David Halberstam was saying, well, you know, you have to understand CBS because, of course, they didn't want to jeopardize none of the networks in the time that Richard Nixon was coming into political office wanted to jeopardize their licenses. Close enough for journalism, Dave. Networks aren't licensed. They own stations which are licensed, but there's never been licensing for networks. But, you know, that's a first draft. When he gets to fix it, oh, the show aired. Daniel Shore on National Public Radio said that if Susie won, Susie Terrell in yesterday's runoff election, she would be the first Republican elected, first Republican senator ever elected from Louisiana. Actually, it would be the first senator, Republican senator elected from Louisiana since Reconstruction. But, you know, ever is what? Several billion years. Reconstruction is 110 years ago. That's close enough for journalism. And on a similarly chronological note, from a gentleman I've stolen my propensity for pauses from.
Where are yes?
Oh, that's nice.
Names in the news today, Bob Stemple, the former.
Well, that's not going to work. So the two examples, ladies and gentlemen, of close enough for journalism. But that's two are exclusive enough, aren't they? Doesn't that sense, is your sense of the value of this program decreasing just because we didn't have the third example? Don't say that. Bob Dunn is tightening the cassette as we speak, and we'll try it one more time, and then we'll move on.
Could take it easy, but he's busier than ever. As chairman of Energy Conversion Devices, he's pushing the automobile industry toward battery-powered cars, and he's working 70-hour days at home and abroad. At the same time, breaking ground now on a new plant in Ohio.
70-hour days, ladies and gentlemen. He's working 70-hour days. From Paul Harvey News this week. It was worth tightening the cassette just to hear that, wasn't it? 70-hour days. Close enough for journalism. That could happen. It could be 70-hour days on Mars. Speaking of planets, despite beliefs that much of the Earth has been altered by civilization, the most comprehensive inventory of wilderness ever done, or done since Reconstruction, not clear, has found that wilderness still covers nearly half of the global land surface. Conservation International, a U.S. environmental organization, has counted 38 great wilderness areas from Antarctica through the Congo forests of Central Africa, including five areas in Australia. The count has taken advantage of databases only available in recent years. An Australian ecologist cautioned against too much focus on size because wilderness was a changing notion. People have debated a long time what wilderness is and come up with various definitions. All right then. This expert says there's no accepted accurate figure for the total size of Australia's wilderness. I would say that big red patch in the middle. According to the Wilderness Society, wilderness is generally seen to possess three attributes: naturalness, remoteness, and size. The crucial issue in the identification of wilderness is not whether an area has been modified by humans, but the extent and nature of the modification. By its definition, wilderness has 70% or more of its original vegetation, covers at least 10,000 square kilometers. What are these kilometers? And has fewer than 5 people per square kilometer. So, there's the good news. Half the Earth is still wilderness. And some of the other half is Louisiana. Trent Lott got gasps from an audience this week. Speaking of wilderness, Senate Republican leader Trent Lott said the United States would have been better off if then-segregationist candidate Strom Thurmond had won the presidency in 1948. Speaking at a 100th birthday party and retirement celebration for Thurmond, Lott said, quote, "I want to say this about my state. When Strom Thurmond ran for president, we voted for him. We're proud of it. And if the rest of the country had followed our lead, we wouldn't have had all these problems over all these years either. Unquote. Didn't specify what the problems were, but you know how people are. Thurmond was the presidential nominee of the Dixiecrat Party in 1948. He carried Louisiana. He declared during his campaign against Harry Truman, "All the laws of Washington and all the bayonets of the army cannot force the Negro into our homes, our schools, our churches," unquote. Delegates from 13 southern states gathered in Birmingham to nominate Thurmond on a platform that said in part, quote, "We stand for the segregation of the races and the racial integrity of each race." Bill Kristol, conservative editor of the Weekly Standard, a minion of Rupert Murdoch's, said when he heard of Lott's comment, quote, "Oh, God," unquote. No, there was more. "It's ludicrous," is the rest of this quote. Lott's office played down the significance of the senator's remarks. His spokesman issued a two-sentence statement. "Senator Lott's remarks were intended to pay tribute to a remarkable man who led a remarkable life." So far, so good. To read anything more into these comments is wrong. Remarkable man who led a remarkable life. That's a broad brush you're painting with there, babe. The spokesman declined to explain what Lott meant when he said the country would not have had all these problems if the rest of the nation had followed Mississippi's lead and elected Thurmond. Lott made jokes about Bob Dole, who'd preceded him to the lectern, and then he became serious when discussing how Mississippi voted in 1948. The gathering, which included many Thurmond family members and past and present staffers of Thurmond's, applauded when Lott said, "We're proud of the 1948 vote, but when he said we wouldn't have had all these problems over all these years if Thurmond had won," there was an audible gasp in the room. But Trent Lott, you know, an audible gasp is a good reception. Ladies and gentlemen, I bring that to you exclusively just to enhance your opinion of the value of this broadcast. You've heard this already. Frequent mountain biking may reduce fertility in men, so the X in extreme sports does not stand for your chromosomes. But now, ladies and gentlemen, talk about exclusive features. I'm going to go over here to this other part of the room and cue an exclusive feature of this broadcast. Just like that. Just as if Mexican sugar was falling on us. It's the apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Exclusive and copyrighted up the wazoo. But, all right, let's start with the apologies, because then there's big news. Big news, Brzezinski. The mayor of Berkeley, Tom Bates, the newly elected mayor of Berkeley, has admitted responsibility for throwing out 1,000 copies of the University of California paper that endorsed his opponent. "I deeply regret that it happened. I was tired on the last day of my campaign," he said. "I made a mistake." After a lot of suspicion that this might not amount to a full apology, on behalf of the state of Oregon, Governor John Kitzhaber did apologize this week for medical procedures carried out over six decades that rendered more than 2,600 Oregonians sterile. Addressing an overflow crowd in the Capitol's ceremonial room, including a number of men and women who were victimized by the sterilization ordered by the state, Kitzhaber said Oregon has made, quote, "remarkable progress," unquote, during the past two decades in how it provides treatment and services to people with mental and physical disabilities. Quote, "But even as we celebrate the progress we've made, we must also acknowledge the realities that darken the history of our state institutions. The time has come to apologize for misdeeds that resulted from widespread misconceptions, ignorance, and bigotry. It's the right thing to do, the just thing to do." John DiLullio, who was first head of President Bush's faith-based initiative office, apologized after he was quoted in Esquire magazine as saying, quote, "There is no precedent in any modern White House for what is going on in this one. Complete lack of a policy apparatus," his quote continued. "What you've got is everything, and I mean everything, being run by the political arm. It's the reign of the Mayberry Machiavellis," DiLullio said. He, after Ari Fleischer issued a statement dismissing the comments as baseless and groundless, DiLullio And Fleischer said that DeLulio had issued an apology. Then DeLulio issued a second statement. John DeLulio agrees that his criticisms were groundless and baseless due to poorly chosen words and examples. He sincerely apologizes and is deeply remorseful. But that's a faith-based apology, so you have to... Saddam Hussein has apologized to the Kuwaiti people for his occupation of their country, but blasted their rulers for conspiring with the United States against Iraq. We apologize to God for any deed that angered him in the past, which we might not have known of, and is blamed on us, and on this basis, we also apologize to you, said a badly written letter from Saddam to the Kuwaiti people, read on Iraqi television by Saeed al-Sahaf. You know, if I was going to... Mohammed Saeed al-Sahaf. If I was going to apologize to the Kuwaiti people, I would ask Mohammed Saeed al-Sahaf to read it. That's just a good choice. The Kuwaitis have rejected the apology. After 6 years of speculation, Whitney Houston has apologized to fans for missed concerts. She canceled a performance in Melbourne, Australia in May 1997, just an hour before she was due to go on stage, infuriating ticket holders who'd paid up to $400 to see her in an intimate show at the local casino. She claimed her voice had gone, but it was allegedly seen smoking cigars at 5 a.m. on the day of the ill-fated shows. So, there are things I apologize for, like concert dates, she told, was it Diane Sawyer? Was it Diane or Barbara?
Diane.
Okay. On ABC this week. The people really mattered to me, and I know they came out to see me, and I apologize for that. I'll make it up to you. I'll send you all cigars. No, she didn't say that. But that's the only people in the world. The public, the fans, are the people that I apologize to. So the only people she apologizes to are the people. I guess she's not apologizing to the wilderness. A Manitoba, Canada supermarket has apologized to an Aboriginal woman after she was barred from buying hairspray in Winnipeg. Rexy Monkman, a 35-year-old business administration student, says she was victimized. She believes she was not sold the item because the cashier thought she would drink the spray to get high. I was angry, embarrassed, and hurt. Feel like she did this because of who I am, an Aboriginal woman. A spokesman for the food company said the clerk should not have refused service. Unfortunately, we made a mistake, said spokesman David Rizabal. We apologize for that. It's a difficult situation. In fairness to the cashier, we're under pressure from the police department to handle the sale of these products carefully. Manitoba law prohibits stores from selling solvents to known abusers. Critics argue the incident proves clerks do not have enough training to make that judgment. The alleged victim has lodged a complaint with the Human Rights Commission of Manitoba. She wants the company to make public its rationale for not selling her the hairspray. Oh, she has a history of substance abuse. I didn't even date in my 20s. She said it was rough. I think I kind of reverted back as I got older and said, well, I'm just going to party. It was kind of a rebel in me. She said she has overcome her substance abuse through prayer. That's Whitney Houston. I mixed up the pages. This woman did not have a history of substance abuse. All right. But that just tells you how life is in Manitoba if you have to drink hairspray to get high. Please. And the Catholic Church's official program for international development has issued an extraordinary apology on behalf of Catholics worldwide, saying they have colluded in the persecution of HIV and AIDS victims in the developing world. Caritas Internationalis. Is that illegal? Oh, it's an umbrella organization representing 150 Catholic relief agencies worldwide. Put itself at odds with senior figures in the Catholic hierarchy by issuing a statement of regret. It says church members, including bishops and priests, silently condone discrimination against people struggling with the AIDS virus. All right, that's pretty good crop of apologies, ladies and gentlemen. And as if I had exclusively stumbled onto something, which then turns out to be meaningful, there's this from the Wharton School, 2002, the year of the apology. Earlier this fall, Safeway took out radio and television ads apologizing to customers of Philadelphia-based Ginuardi's, a family-owned chain of grocery stores brought by Safeway in 2000. Safeway acknowledged the changes initiated by its managers had created customer dissatisfaction and promised to do better. It seems, says the Wharton School, that 2002 is the year of the apology, on both the corporate and individual level, with acts of contrition appearing regularly since the collapse of Enron. I said it started with 9/11, but who knows? Dennis Kozlowski, then CEO of Tyco, kicked it off last spring. No, he didn't, when he apologized to investors for a nearly $2 billion loss. Merrill Lynch issued a public apology in May for emails from its analysts that may have appeared inconsistent with Merrill's published recommendations, i.e., these stocks stink. McDonald's apologized to Hindus. We've had many of these apologies on the broadcast. How effective are apologies like these? When should they be offered? And can they backfire? Issuing an apology as a strategy is not costless, says marketing professor Mary Frances Luce. There are risks. The apology might serve to strengthen the negative associations in the customer's mind between the brand and the problem. Safeway could end up solidifying the idea that it mismanaged its acquisition. In addition, there is the sleeper effect, according to marketing professor Luce. This refers to a situation in which a person is given a piece of information and is also told that this information is not true. When you test the person later about this information, however, he or she is more likely to rate the statement as true than if you'd never told him anything.
What?
That's why, ladies and gentlemen, I didn't major in marketing. But it's the year of the apology. It's got to be true. The Wharton School says so.
Well, as I John saw the mighty number
moving way up in the middle of the air. I John saw the mighty number
moving
way in the middle of the air.
Great God,
I John saw the mighty number
moving
way up in the middle of the air. I John saw the mighty number
moving
way in the middle of the air.
Well, way back yonder in the days of old, John saw a city made with gold. It was a beautiful city with its pearly gates. Then John looked around and began to rebate. There are
three gates in the east.
Hallelujah, there are
three gates in the west.
Oh, there are
three gates in the north.
Lordy, there are
three gates in the south.
Shouldn't be
four gates to the city, four square wide. Hallelujah.
Well, they counted the angel three by three. He thought he heard the bumping of the angel wing. Well, he looked to the east, he looked to the west. He saw a number of angels standing to the breast. He looked to the north, he looked to the south. He looked again and began to count out. There are
12 angels in the east. Twelve angels in the west. Twelve angels in the north. Twelve angels in the south.
That'd be
48 angels to the city. Four square lines. Hallelujah.
Well, John, he looked over Calvary's hill to see if the beautiful city was real. He looked up high. He saw a man with 12 bright stars in his right hand. Well, he looked to the north. He looked to the south. He saw a number, a great amount. It was a mighty number which he could remember.
Mighty number that new man could number. And my, what a beautiful city.
12 gates to the city, beautiful city, a great big beautiful city, four square miles. Hallelujah.
This is Le Show from New Orleans, Louisiana. Ladies and gentlemen, the latest on the digital wonderland that awaits us. Just around the corner, just over the horizon. If we would merely just apply a little more force, just a little more coercion. That's all it's going to take. According to the General Accounting Office, Dateline Washington, few U.S. consumers are aware of the transition to digital television signals that will, and now this is Reuters saying this, that will offer higher quality pictures. Somebody tell Reuters it will offer higher quality pictures unless it doesn't. That's an exclusive, ladies and gentlemen, from this program right here. And more steps are needed to accelerate the move, according to a report issued to Congress by the General Accounting Office. Why, you know, you could just listen to this show and they'd know that. Few U.S. consumers are aware of the transition to digital television. That means they are bored by it and decided not to cooperate. About 40% of Americans said they had never heard of the digital television transition. Another 43% said they were only somewhat aware. Well, somewhat aware is aware. How aware do you want to be? This was a survey of 1,000 people included in this report by the GAO. Of course, that's a poll, and those are so good these days. Additionally, almost half of those surveys did not know the difference between the current analog television signals and digital, the GAO said. Well, I'll help them out. The analog one is good. If consumers are unfamiliar with DTV, particularly with benefits such as high-definition television, for which you should be praying, because that's the only way you're going to get it, they are less likely to purchase digital television sets, said the GAO. If they're unfamiliar with it, they're less likely to purchase it. How much did that report cost? Congress and the FCC have been pressing for faster advances of digital television so consumers can enjoy better pictures, while the government can reclaim the airwaves used by the old analog signals to be auctioned off to wireless companies. Wireless countries. I think all countries are wireless these days. Content providers have been somewhat hesitant to produce programs in digital. There have been differences between cable operators, television manufacturers, and broadcasters over how to get the signals to consumers. This is Reuters talking, of course. The reality is people who actually get digital signals report bad reception, serious reception problems. In New York City, a guy who writes a newsletter on this subject reports that out of the 7 stations that now transmit digital in New York City, he can get 2, one with an antenna on his floor and the other with the antenna, same antenna, moved to his ceiling. That's fun. To jumpstart the move to digital, the FCC has ordered television manufacturers to include digital tuners in new sets. Many other things must happen before the transition can be successfully completed, the General Accounting Office said. These include adoption of digital equipment by consumers, cable carrying digital broadcast signals, and the availability of digital programming. The GAO urged the Federal Communications Commission to consider a specific date to require cable operators to switch to carrying digital signals. It also urged the FCC to evaluate the benefits of requiring television makers to produce sets that are digital cable ready. Plus, the GAO said visits to retailers discovered that retail salespeople were overestimating how much digital content was available and misstating what was needed to receive digital signals. Oh, my God, no. Basically, the GAO said, we need more mandates to force the benefits of digital television upon a somewhat aware populace. Hey, you know what? It's Christmas time. Let's all go buy something digital right now.
Look at yourself. If you had a sense of humor, you would laugh to beat the band. Look at yourself. Do you still believe the rumor that romance is simply grand? Since you took it right on the chin, you have lost that bright toothpaste grin. My mental state is all a jumble. I sit around and sadly mumble. Fools rush in. Well, here I am. Very glad to be unhappy. I can't win, but here I am. More than glad to be unhappy. Unrequited love's a bore. And I've got it pretty bad. But for someone you adore, it's a pleasure to be sad. I'm like a stray baby lamb. With no mammy and no pappy, I'm so unhappy. but oh, oh, so glad.
What about digital Mexican sugar? What do you think? That's got a nice ring to it, don't you think? Why don't just let's adopt a mandate for that while we're at it. Digital Mexican sugar, because it's digital. Ladies and gentlemen, while much of the talk right now is being focused on the Iraq government's complete, full, and accurate report on the absence of weapons of mass destruction, on the United States' reaction to that report, reaction has been continued to be muted to the selection of Henry Kissinger as the chairman of the independent commission to investigate the root causes, right down there at the root, of the 9/11 disaster. And reaction, at least on this plane of existence, however exclusive, of course, just to add to your perception of the value of this program, we now, I believe this will be the first time this is broadcast, another, through our sources, another one of the surreptitiously recorded tapes of President Nixon in heaven.
We've managed to keep the squabbling between Tricia and Julie over your library and its endowment out of the press the last few months.
Okay, that's good. Yeah. That's very good. How do we do that? Threats? Payoff? What?
Well, basically just working the who cares about Nixon anymore angle.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure. Yeah, that angle. Mm-hmm. Of course, doesn't that conflict with our whole Nixon as a major historical figure angle?
Only if you think about it.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's the last thing the Jews who control the media are going to do.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean...
No, absolutely.
I mean, I know they don't like to hear that kind of talk up here, but...
not the point.
I mean, ask yourself, you know, who runs this place?
There you go.
I mean, it's not the Quakers, I can tell you that.
No.
And you know how many tickets the Quakers got for the big Christmas sing-along with Mitch?
That's in the huge amphitheater over on Claude 458.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. For all the Quakers up here, and you know how very few of those people ended up downstairs.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are only 5,000 tickets.
Yeah. That's barely 1 in 10.
Well, whatever it is.
No. Your point's a good one, of course.
Yeah. What else?
Well, not totally unrelated. Bush has chosen the head of the Independent Commission to investigate 9/11.
Let me guess. El Padre Gray? I guess that's who I would have chosen.
Oh, sure.
No question about it.
No. Good man.
Very good man.
Mm-hmm. See? He's dead, though, and I believe he's up here.
Yeah, I suppose.
I mean, I guess you could still appoint him, but...
No, you're right. Yeah. You could appoint a dead man, you know.
But, yeah.
But it'd be wrong. Ollie North?
It was offered to him, but he couldn't take the pay cut.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing. Mm-hmm. You know, in our day, we could have just offered Dan Rather more money than CBS did, and the whole thing would have just blown over.
Yeah. No, that's true.
See? But, of course, that's water totally over the bridge now.
Mm-hmm.
No use worrying that to death.
No, obviously not.
Done is done and that sort of thing.
Yep.
Still, you can't help but wonder.
No, it's true.
I mean, You know, you got all the time in the world here.
Sure.
Why not keep trying to rewrite the past?
No, only natural.
That's right.
What a prudent person would...
A reasonable man.
Would do under the circumstances.
Yeah. See, that's what the law always asks. Mm. What would a reasonable man do?
Oh, sure.
You know, as in, a reasonable man would have burned the tapes.
Right.
No cart in the country.
No. Open and shut.
Yep. Open and shut.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, our sources among the angelhood...
Yep.
Tell us that Bush selected Kissinger.
To run the...
Yep. Independent Commission.
Kissinger.
Yep.
That's balls.
Mm-hmm.
That's real balls.
Yeah.
And he's not dead.
Nope.
No, we knew that.
No. Very much a part of the...
No, of course.
Worldwide commercial advocacy community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, sure. You know, I mean, what's he supposed to do? Get rich by teaching at Harvard the rest of his damn life? I mean...
No. Only way for him to go.
Yeah.
Well, because,
at his age, whatever he is, 79, 80, to be spending a couple of hours each afternoon alone in a cramped little office with silly little 19-year-old girls, I mean, that's no life for Henry.
No.
He's got to be in the arena, see?
Mm-hmm.
That was always the one level on which we truly understood each other. Got to be in the arena.
Sure.
Otherwise, you know, you're just...
No, I know, no. Some grocer halfway between here and Riverside.
That's right.
Or San Berdu.
That's right. Or San Berdu. Yeah, Howard Hunt would have been good.
He was good.
I mean, to have this commission deal.
Yeah, well, same problem.
Dead problem?
Yep.
Yeah, well... Henry's a handful.
Yeah.
Think these Bush people can handle them.
They got some pretty tough cookies over there. I mean...
No, I know. I mean,
Karl Rove would eat Chuck Colson's grandma for lunch.
Oh, for brunch, even.
There you go.
I mean, for brunch.
Yeah, right before the waffle.
Right. But, I mean...
I think they realize the only way you keep Henry under control is just to give him an account that... If it blows...
Yeah, no, I know. The main splatter is on him.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, because...
Now, Hoover's been on our ass already about making sure Henry doesn't slime the Bureau.
No, he doesn't even...
Because those were never Henry's people.
No. That's what I was...
So getting. Smearing them in his report would be just, you know...
No, of course, just a target practice for Henry.
That's right. That's
well,
right.
Does Hoover know that we,
Hard to be sure what he knows.
I know, but,
Is he monitoring our contacts with Henry? I don't know.
No.
I do know he has a full-time tap on the host of, the Crossing Over show, just in case.
Hmm. This John character?
John Edward?
Yeah. What a crock.
Yeah.
I mean, If he's so good, you know, at contacting the dead, let's see him contact Alexander Butterfield, for God's sake.
Butterfield's not dead.
He's not?
Nope.
Well, then what's all the damn meditation up here worth anyway?
Well,
I mean, you can't take care of a simple little thing like...
Don't really think it's just really for...
Heaven's sake, I mean, you stop swearing, you know, you delete all the expletives yourself, and this is the thanks you get?
Yeah.
I mean...
No, it's probably not a profitable line of conversation, because, you know...
Oh, I know. Yeah. I know.
Mm.
Of course. They're taping me up here. Yeah. Which is their right, of course. Huh? It's their heaven and all. But I'll tell you one thing, Holloman.
Mm-hmm.
You can bet your heavenly bippy, these guys are burning their tapes.
Mm. Probably that smell you notice every once in a while.
Sure. So, our message to Kissinger, do the right thing.
Yep.
We know he won't have any leaks in his operation.
Oh, sure, he'll have them all tapped.
Yeah. He'd tap Chuck Colson's grandmother.
Yep.
So... No leaking problem.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so then the question is, just locate the relevant documents and
have them handled.
That's right, handled.
And he knows.
Oh, he knows what that means.
He knows how to do it.
Oh, of course. You know, most important part of the whole deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
And we can give him a certain degree of assistance on high priority items with...
That's right. Total deniability.
Oh, the best.
Well, that's right. I mean, that's what we offer him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Best deniability ever.
Yep.
All right. Good.
Hit send.
Mm.
Hit send on the...
On the thing?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Okay.
Yep.
Wait.
They charge extra for daytime, right?
I don't think...
Let's wait until 5, huh? No harm in it.
No problem.
That's right. No problem.
Okay, good.
So don't say you do. You don't. You might think that things will change, but take my word. They won't.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to... That's all the Mexican sugar we have time for in this edition of Le Show. The program returns exclusively next week at the same time, exclusively over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America on shortwave, via shortwave, at WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, and around the known world, wilderness or otherwise, on your computer, whenever you want it, at two different locations, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. And it would be just like if we called them all by their first names, boys and girls, if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much, And go Hornets! The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Thanks to Drew at Piety Street Recording. And thanks, as always, to Bob Dunn, the great listener at WWL-TV here, for assembling a studio on such short notice and making today's program possible. Next week from the original Le Show Dome, one more time. So long from New Orleans. Le Show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, the satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.